Blair.
Hey, Adam.
Yo.
How's it going?
It's a long time no speak.
Yeah, how was your holidays?
What holidays? You mean, like, vacation or holidays?
It's February. Yeah, like, the holidays. The Christmas, New Year's. You Brits do that, right?
No, I don't know what that is. yeah, it was all well, okay. Thanks. What about yours?
It was all right. We drove to Florida to spend the holidays with my family this time around, and it was like 2,000 miles round trip from DC to Florida and back.
Damn,
you know. So
I didn't realize it was so far.
Yeah, probably won't be doing it again anytime soon. It's just, you know, we did it because it was like a 2-week vacation, but it's, I don't know, it was not worth that much driving because we had to bring the dogs.
Of course.
So we couldn't fly, yeah.
Damn. Oh.
Yeah, so.
Fair enough, man. Are we going to explain to the people what, like, is this like a new season?
Yeah, we got a new season going. We.
Season 2?
I think we both had a lot of life changes. I moved into a new house. You apparently are moving across the globe pretty soon here.
Potentially moving to Australia soon. So
yeah, which pisses me right off because Tony and I, my wife and I planned, we do a big vacation every year, and next year we're going to the UK. And actually specifically Manchester.
You lie. Well, you coming to Manchester?
The couple that we're going to go with, Mike and Bryn, she's a big... I want to say City. I'm probably going to get it wrong. She's going to be pissed. I don't
remember
which
United.
One. Yeah,
most people
think it's City.
Most people internationally prefer United.
It might be. I don't know. I don't follow the beautiful game enough to lock it into memory.
Here's the easy way of figuring it out. Is she a red or a blue?
I've never seen her dressed for it, so I don't know.
She doesn't have to dress for it. Does she refer to herself as a red or a blue?
I've never heard it. I don't know.
Oh, then she's not a true fan.
She lives in Tennessee. I don't follow her soccer fandom that closely. I just know she wants to go to a man ex gay. She's a Manchurian. I don't know which one. Just get over
Manchurian.
It. Manchurian.
Right? We're called Mancunians.
Whatever.
Fair enough.
It's all the same.
What are we talking about?
Mancunian. Where? That's a weird word.
It's not. We're Manx.
Mancunian.
We call ourselves Manx for short.
Manx. I like that better. I can get behind Manx. No, nobody has, what is it, Liverpool? The proper Scouser. That's probably
Scousers.
One of the best terms I've heard.
Scousers. Yeah.
Today, I don't know, you brought up something in WhatsApp the other day that you wanted to ask about or bring up.
Well,
diet plans, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, I worded it a bit differently, but you made the topic more broad, and I think it works better this way because we can talk about both sides of the coin. So, do diet plans work?
So, I don't know, give us some backstory, like, where, why'd you bring it up, and what was your original ask?
Okay, so I have a client who I've been working with for a couple months now, and they used to work with a nutritionist. Now, after working with this person for some time now, I am noticing some discrepancies with their relationship with food. And, you know, it's like, okay, I have to treat this situation quite sensitively. Now, when taking this person on, I asked about what the work was like with their previous nutrition coach in this sentence. I'm not specifically working nutrition, by the way. I'm doing the whole package. But they told me that the nutritionist had given them a diet plan, and every time this person didn't stick to the diet plan, the nutritionist would tell them off and say, you're not sticking to my diet plan. You're never going to get the results that you want. And would basically shit on the foods that they were eating, and therefore not helping the relationship with their food because it's outside of that person's diet plan. So it just kind of like, oh, I just hate it, man, when people say there's good foods and bad foods, or, you know, they tell you that their foods are the best, or when people like shit on your relationship with the foods that you do enjoy to basically make out that their food choices are better than what you want to have. So I guess, like, at the topic of do diet plans work is a more broad spectrum where I think we can cover where that nutritionist was coming from and where the silver lining is and where's the other side of the coin.
And I do think there's a lot to unpack from how that person was treated by this nutritionist. My first question is, in the UK, does nutritionist refer to a, like, registered or licensed individual, or is it like in the US where anybody can take a weekend course and call themselves a nutritionist?
Anyone can do a weekend course, but you can also be a registered nutritionist over here, which is a degree level qualification.
Okay, so because here we specifically, dietitian is reserved for a registration.
Okay.
So you can call yourself a nutritionist without education, but you can't call yourself a dietitian without education. A lot of people use the terms interchangeably, so I just like to be clear with, like, what level of classification we're talking about.
Yeah, it's hard to distinguish, like, a nutritionist versus a registered nutritionist, because a lot of people don't care about the term registered. They'll just say, oh, well, they're a qualified nutritionist. That's good enough.
Or they don't know the difference. There's one that's popped up around here called a functional nutritionist that people have started using, and I just think it's the dumbest.
What
term.
Is that? Like,
is there dysfunctional nutrition or afunctional nutrition? Like, what's the?
I'd say
what's the opposite of a functional nutritionist?
I'd say most nutritionists are dysfunctional, but maybe I'm wrong.
If we're talking about the weekend warriors, then I agree. But
yeah, I'm not going to badmouth all of them because I know some good ones too.
So the question was, I guess do you want to start with do diet plans work and then work, like, get more narrow, or do you want to start with that specific situation with the...
No, let's start with do diet plans work. Which side of the coin do you want to go on?
I think they do or can work, you know, so I'll defend them to a degree.
Go on then. Why do they work?
So I believe that there are people who work very well with structure. They don't like knowing how the watch works, for lack of a better phrase. So they don't want to know the concept, the big picture. They just want to be told what foods they can eat and or how much or when, you know. So they operate very well under a structure of, this is the plan and I'm going to stick to it. I think the bigger question for me is do they work forever? And to that, I would say no.
Okay. So to counter your argument of do diet plans work with the structure part of the element, fair enough. I feel like I understand your point of view where people need structure, but would they not benefit from structure around the foods they already consume versus one pre-made for them around someone else's calorie control?
I believe this is where we start to agree. So I'll try my hardest to continue to play devil's advocate. So I've always hated diet plans where it says things like 500 grams of chicken and 150 grams of sweet potato, and, you know, so it's very specific which protein, which starch, which fat, which fruit, which vegetable, because I do think they're too rigid. Even that, I think, is defensible in the short term. Some people can do really well. From there, it's on the nutritionist, dietitian, trainer, whatever, to have the flexibility to change based off the feedback of the individual. So they try it for a week or two and the person says, I really can't afford this much salmon, or I don't like eating this much chicken at one time, or I hate sweet potatoes, whatever the feedback is, then the trainer, dietitian, nutritionist, etc. should take that information and modify. And I think, like, what's happening with your trainer is they feel like they have all the answers and it's a form of victim blaming. My system works. You're the one that's failing. You know, if you can't stick to it, then fuck you. You know, it's kind of how it comes across. And that's the rigidity or inflexibility of the professional, for lack of a better term, that's getting in the way of seeing results. And, you know, since they're not taking it seriously enough or whatever, or adhering to this perfect plan this human has devised, let's blame you and tell you off.
So to counter what you've just said, I find one of the difficulties with what I'm going to use, nutritionist, dietitian, the whole spectrum, when you stick to a strict diet plan or a diet plan where you don't get flexibility with food choices, you create this relationship where you can only lose weight on the diet, on said diet plan, because you feel like those foods are the reason why you lost weight, rather than someone just structured a total day's worth of calories around your movement so that you can be in a calorie deficit. And so people will associate, well, if I stick to this diet plan, I will always lose weight. So they'll do the diet plan, they'll come off the diet plan, they'll go back on the diet plan, they'll come off the diet plan. And so they'll eat loads of foods that they never like, because they feel like all they can do is eat the foods that they don't like to lose weight, because no one ever taught them how to balance the calories of the foods that they over-moderate.
I firmly agree with that. You know, and I think that's kind of the point I was getting at, is that it requires flexibility and feedback. Can diet plans work? Absolutely, if they are a living, breathing, growing document, as opposed to a rigid picture of this is what you eat, period. And I've seen exactly what you're saying, where somebody goes on the military diet, where all they eat is cans of tuna and eggs and whatever the hell this, and they see success. So in their minds, like, anytime they need to see success, they have to go back to this rigid, low calorie, overly structured diet plan. And there's no education or learning. And so I will always try to educate. You know, diet plans can be a good jumping off point that grows into something bigger. It grows into more conceptual learning how to eat, not being told what to eat. But like I mentioned, I do think there are some people that they have too much on their plate. They're too busy. They, you know, they will tell you all the hurdles that they have, and try as you might to break them down, this person is just going to operate by having a plan. However, that plan should also have some level of variety or options to it. It shouldn't just be eat exactly these foods every day and good luck with your life.
Okay.
That person is almost certainly going to fail.
Fair enough. You're taking all the guesswork out of people's lives. But I do find that with this, if you're not helping people learn, then they're not going to know any better by the time that you stop working together. You know, I can get you to lose weight tomorrow, right? But, like, if I didn't teach you how you lost weight, guess what? You're going to come back to me, like, 2 days later.
I agree wholeheartedly. And the data actually supports, so about 85% of people, or 7 out of every 8, who are overweight or obese, will lose a significant amount of weight in their lifetime. Less than 1% will maintain that weight loss. And that's the bigger thing we got to look at. So, you know, playing devil's advocate, I'm defending this, you know, we'll pretend it's a high-level CEO who's just too busy and wants to be told what to eat and not think about it. I think that is the exception. Most people are not that individual who is going to operate and function off of a diet plan. And even that individual is going to need a new diet plan every couple weeks or months to stay engaged or intrigued. You know, you can't just hand them one lunch, one breakfast, one dinner and say this is what you eat for the rest of your life, because kill me, that sounds terrible.
I would challenge that as well anyway, because the method I would use, if you want to use diet plans, is you give them a strict diet plan to get the weight off, but then, you know, like a reverse diet, you slowly introduce the foods that they want to back into their lives, but you would control the portion size so they can actually understand how they manage the calories.
I think the point that is worth looking at is, how are we introducing diet plans? You know, so,
well, people want quick fixes. People want
quick
fixes.
It's a band-aid. I think replace diet plan with Ozempic or Wegovy or one of these medications or weight loss surgery.
No different to a diet plan.
The problem is that people's goal is weight loss, and the hard work is learning a new relationship with food. The hard work is changing your belief structure around the purpose and functionality of food. And, you know, people a lot of times don't want to do the hard work, or they're so results oriented that they see the immediate thing they wanted, weight loss, and they stop there. Oh, this drug made me lose the weight. That's all I cared about. So mission accomplished. And this is why we have such a high level of weight rebound without, you know, I've seen other excuses for it, but I really think it's behavioral. It's not learning yourself and learning your relationship with food and changing at a foundational level what the purpose of foods are to us.
Well, on that aspect where you're talking about behavioral, let's come on to the topic of nutritionists, dietitians. Everyone is human. Everyone has a relationship with food. Now, that's not always going to be a healthy relationship. And so people don't realize that whoever they're working with, you're learning what that person has learned or taught themselves. And so if that is that some foods they don't feel comfortable consuming, they are going to put that onto you if they don't have better education or a good relationship with that food. And so you can't solely rely on one source to learn everything from. I include myself in that.
And correct. I think the big difference between a good coach, regardless of what aspect, life, fitness, nutrition, and a bad coach, is their ability to see or view things from the perspective of who they're trying to help. So if you can only view the world through the lens of how you read things and how you understand things, you're missing the point. You know, so really solid example I had recently was a woman wanted to lose weight, and she was following some nutritionist. And this is, I think, the mistake of most fitfluencers out there is the...
You're talking about me.
Lou, let me show you. Yep, you specifically. this is about a video you made. No, so she was following some... It was a woman who, like, you know, was teaching healthy meals and stuff. And it was like, oh, look at this super easy meal. And they show this beautiful homemade, low-cal, high-protein, blah, blah, blah. But it's like they honestly add a layer of guilt if you're not cutting and chopping all your own fresh vegetables and making everything from scratch. And it looks really easy because with good editing, that 45-minute, you know, prep plus 30-minute, you know, hour-plus meal is a 90-second video. And it's like, yeah, it's really great when you wave the knife over the onion and it's magically chopped. Like, that's for people that aren't adept in the kitchen, that's a 10-minute process to get an onion chopped. And so it became impossible because it's like this person's job is to be an Instagram influencer. That's how they make their money, is these videos and their sponsorships. So they're trying to make it sound like it's something that most people could just do. And it's... This is how they're making money doing it. Like, they're being paid to spend 2 hours prepping this meal and editing the video and blah, blah, blah. And most people don't have time for that. And it's like my client wound up feeling bad because she had to resort to frozen meals or, you know, some prepackaged stuff. And it's, if you can't hear what your client's saying and understand, like, I meal prep. I love meal prepping. I chop all my own veggies. I enjoy being in the kitchen. Like, there is a rhythmic, meditative nature to chopping vegetables that I enjoy. I fully understand that I am the rarity in that, not the common component. So I teach my clients to use frozen pre-diced vegetables. As long as there's one or two ingredients and not a laundry list, like, okay, it's still onions. Someone else should do the chopping for you. It's processed, but it's minimally processed. And, you know, I just believe that too many people are vilifying shortcuts, even though they're healthy shortcuts, because they only understand the world from their own lens, which is, I have all the time in the world to prep this food and make this video and make people feel bad for not eating how I'm eating.
Yeah, it's true, and they make money from it. And, you know, like, that's what I tend to find, like, I don't know if you saw a video I posted on social media recently, but it was an old video from a few
years. No, I don't follow you.
Bullshit. But, like, it was a video from, like, 2 years ago that went pretty viral, and I had a fitness trainer who had like 90,000 followers commenting on my video saying, you're just using this video for clickbait opportunity to basically for some likes and views. But she goes, what the guy said in the video is completely true. And the video is basically me turning around, and this guy chose 10 ingredients and said, don't eat these 10 ingredients to lose weight. But there's nothing wrong with the ingredients. It was the portion control. So this trainer said that you can't eat, nobody should be eating bread, sugar, or soda drinks, like fizzy drinks. And I turned around and said, there's nothing wrong with consuming them in moderation, so you're wrong. And she was like, you know, you're wrong. She goes, nobody should be eating them. They're poison and all this. Now, what she doesn't realize is she's portraying her relationship with those foods onto my page. And, you know, it didn't make me look bad because it's just her opinion versus me saying, well, guess what? You can eat them. And her saying, no, you can't eat them. But anyone who's working with her will have that relationship of, no, you can't eat bread, sugar, or fizzy drinks because it's poison, it's poison, it's poison. And so people walking away after working with her will believe that and portray that information onto their loved ones, anyone that they work with, anyone in their lives. Whereas anyone who I'm working with, they're going, oh, yeah, I can have them. I just can't have as much as I used to have. And so it's crazy, like, you've got one trainer, like, with this horrendous relationship with food, going, don't do this, don't do this, and like, whoever they're working with or that person chooses to work with them will then pass on that information to other people, and then you've got the complete opposite end of the spectrum. No wonder people are confused.
Yeah, I'm not going to use an absolute statement, because I mean, that's the only way you can ever be truly wrong is to be absolutist.
Yeah.
But there are very few, if any, true pure poisons. And what I mean by that is the dose makes the poison.
Someone wrote that on my page, actually.
Cyanide, well-known poison. It's been used in many stories, novels, TV shows to poison and murder people. But it's a component part of vitamin B12, otherwise known as cyanocobalamin. So cyanide is the core element in the primary source of B12 in the human diet.
This is where I can tell you're a nerd, because I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know, but and a lot of people don't, you know, like, it's the dose makes the poison. And I also think it's like you're mentioning, it's not thinking outside of your own context. And so, you know, we could have a whole podcast about how, you know, the types of foods that are quote unquote healthy and how they're promoted. Actually, I think we'll write that down as like health as a context and not a concrete idea. I think health is fluid. But sugar does not make you fat. Sugar is low nutrient and easy to overconsume if you're not careful, because it tends to be high calorie, low volume, and overeating calories makes you fat. And sugar is certainly a culprit of overeating calories, but it's not like any amount of sugar, period, you're automatically fat. You know, you've gained fat or you're poisoning yourself. And it's like, people don't understand chemistry, and then they make these bold claims about toxins, and God, it just burns the fuck out of me.
That's the biggest claim that I think is around social media right now and around the world. Everyone thinks sugar makes you fat. What do people call Coke, you know, like Coca-Cola, right? They call it, can I have a diet Coke? Or they say, can I have a full fat Coke? There's zero fat in Coke, right?
Nobody uses that in America. I've never heard that in my life.
Really?
A full fat Coke?
Yeah,
wow.
That's what they call it over here.
That's a new one on me.
If you go to the bar and you want a normal Coke, a full sugar Coke, people say, can I have a full fat Coke?
Wow.
right? And so, but the thing is, there's zero fat in Coke, right? So people basically have the assumption that because it's sugar, it'll turn you fat, which is why they're calling it that.
That's insane to me, but okay.
That's crazy, isn't it? But that's where it's referred to. But people say it without even realize what they're saying it. And so they have no choice but to believe that sugar turns to fat because that's what they're calling ingredients.
Well, it does if it's an excess of calories from sugar. But...
sure. But like when people talk like that, then it has to be what you believe, right?
I don't know. And so back to the point, do diet plans work? Ultimately, I believe no. You know, I think if your goal is to get a diet plan, when that comes up with clients that I see, my first order of business is to talk them out of it.
Yeah.
I do use them as jumping off points. I use them where I send them, essentially it's a method of handing them some recipes to help get, or some meal ideas to help get more protein and nutrients into their diet. So it typically is more highlighting, here are some quick and easy breakfast ideas that provide at least X amount of protein. And then here are two or three lunch ideas that provide, but if you see the diet plans I write, they're very conceptual. So sure, it has overnight oats and Greek yogurt bowl and eggs as a breakfast choice. But then lunch and dinner, it's like, it just says cooked meal. And it basically gives them portions, you know, one fist size portion of starch and two palm sized portions of protein. It's not telling them 500 grams of salmon and 150 grams of sweet potato and like, this is your diet for the foreseeable future. But I always educate, like, this is a foundational element. You are not going to stay on this forever. You have to grow from this document and learn how to do this on your own, whether that's counting calories or just understanding nutrition. It's, you know, it's never, here's the plan, see you later. It's, if you really are adamant about having a plan as an action step, we are going to use this document to grow, to learn, to highlight core concepts of nutrition. It's, you know, I try never to see anybody less than three times, but I have clients that I've seen weekly for 2.5 years, you know, and it's
I try not to see you three times.
Growth. No, you don't want to see me three times.
No, I mean, sorry, clearly,
I'm coming to Manchester next year and you're moving.
That's why I'm leaving.
Yeah. Where'd you say you're going again? I don't listen to you.
Oh, thank God. I don't want to tell you again.
What part of Australia are you thinking about?
Melbourne?
Okay. If it was Perth, I'd be there. That's the wine country, isn't it?
Well, we were thinking of Perth, but no.
Looks like we're going to Melbourne. I think Perth is like near wine country in Australia. They got some good Shiraz down there.
Shiraz.
Huh? Yeah, they do call it Shiraz in Australia and in South Africa.
We call it Shiraz as well. You call it Shiraz. You need to sort that out.
The French invented that term, first off, but no, it's the same wine.
Are you French?
Huh? No, but California grows French wine, so predominantly.
How can you grow French wine? You're not in France.
I mean, it's the French grapes, bro. Plus, I mean,
then it's not French because it's not in France.
French wines, like, I tried to be resistant to French wines where I was like, nah, I'm going to like these off-cuff wines and blah, blah. Then, like, you start drinking French wines and you just, it's annoying how good they are. The French have wine figured out. It's insane. But, yeah, they, like, slowly turned to me where I'm like, yeah, French is what's up.
So you're drinking. Really,
Spanish is my favorite wine, but, you know.
You like
Spanish
a bit of Rioja.
Depends on the grape, but actually, while we were in Spain, I'd like Ribera del Duero better.
I don't know what that is. You lost me now.
Wow. Amateur. But really, it's specifically Garnacha from Spain is my favorite.
Oh, wine. What? We're drinking wine, and there's nutritionists saying that you can't eat certain foods?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll be the first to tell you. And I think this actually brings full circle to kind of what we were chatting about. No amount of alcohol is healthy, but there are amounts of alcohol that are not unhealthy. And I think that's the problem with like these sugar statements is there. You saying you can have these foods in moderation internet social justice warriors are going to take that to mean that you're defending these as health foods. And it's like, you never said they were healthy. You said that there were amounts you can have that aren't unhealthy.
You know, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because, like, a trainer at my gym called me out saying on my social media, I say sugar is healthy and that people can eat all they want. And I said, I never said that. I just said it's not unhealthy or it can't be not consumed. And so you've misinterpreted what I've said completely. So there you go. And that's a trainer.
Yeah. People are very, like, dual in their thinking. If it's not healthy, then it's unhealthy. If it's, you know, and so...
Black
they don't
white.
Have the ability to, yeah, to say, oh, well, shades of gray suggest that there are amounts of sugar that are not unhealthy. You know, it's like artificial sweeteners. I'm never going to say that they're a health food, but I certainly think they're better for you than chugging sugar all day long, especially if you're diabetic or trying to lose weight. Like, it's a smart move to move towards non-nutritive sweeteners just to cut calories.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, so... Well, right, cool, let's wrap this one up.
Absolutely. All right, we've got a few more episodes to go, and then you'll get all of season 2.
Yeah.
Bye.
A Healthy Debate is sugar positive and likely contains gluten and peanuts. This episode was produced by Blair Solberger. Adam doesn't help with editing in any way, shape, or form. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Instagram at A Healthy Debate or email us at ahealthydebatepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.